Hello, and welcome back to Talking Asset Management with KPMG. I'm Scott Woods, and will be your host as we continue our credit series. Today, we're going to talk about common workout structures. It's great to welcome back the esteemed Jim Sewell to our podcast, and also joining us today is Chelsea Rydell, both part of our Washington National Tax Pass-Throughs group. The last time you were on, Jim, we talked about distressed debt and some general topics for borrowers and lenders to consider. Since then, we've seen an increasing movement into stress debt scenarios, particularly for real estate, towards negotiating tranched repayment of debt with the borrower injecting equity that is repaid in the middle of the waterfall. I think you guys call these AB structures. With that, Chelsea, can you explain what that is exactly?
Yeah, sure, Scott. So these AB structures involve bifurcating the existing debt into multiple tranches, that being an A note tranche and a B note tranche, hence the AB. The borrower generally will inject new equity into the investment as well, and that equity with a preferred return is going to be repaid after both the A note and interest on that A note is repaid, but before the B note and interest on that B note is repaid. The A note amount generally approximates to the fair market value of the investment at that time, while the B note is essentially more of a hope note, you know, one that will be repaid only if the investment actually recovers. And so in some situations, the borrower is also sharing in payments made under that B note tranche of the waterfall.
All right, got it. So I think I understand the structure. What are some of the business dynamics that are driving the borrowers and lenders towards this structure?
The hope is that the structure creates a win-win, or maybe if not a true win-win, more realistically, at least improves on what would otherwise be a big lose-lose scenario for both the borrower as well as the lender. The lender is avoiding having to take immediate ownership of the investment, and that's something a lender may not even be in a position to realistically take on. And so this structure generates some hope that the lender will ultimately be able to recover more than they would currently by virtue of the borrower's new injection of that equity investment they're making, which is going to be used to improve the state of the asset, as well as buy more time for hopefully some market condition improvement. Then for the borrower, the new equity that they're putting in is like a new investment that hopefully is going to provide a favorable return on a standalone basis, but also the possibility of resuscitating that prior investment that isn't looking so great at the moment.
Interesting. So I imagine the tax consequences are pretty complicated. Jim, What does this structure mean for the borrower?
As Chelsea described, the B note is subordinated to the new equity coming in. And under those facts, it's highly likely that the B note should be treated as equity for tax purposes following the modification. Now, for the borrower, the tax treatment may depend on whether the borrower is a regarded partnership for tax purposes or is a disregarded entity owned by that partnership. You see that oftentimes with special purpose entities. If the commercial borrower is a regarded partnership, the B portion of the note probably is treated as contributed to the partnership in exchange for an equity interest. And there, the partnership has COD income. The COD income is measured by the difference between the adjusted issue price of the debt and the fair market value the partnership interest received. So that's pretty straightforward. But if the borrower is a disregarded entity, the treatment, I'd say, is significantly less certain. In this situation, because the entity doesn't become a partnership until a split second after the debt is contributed and the lender is admitted as a partner, it's arguable that the transaction cannot be treated as a contribution of debt to a partnership. And there, instead, the lender is treated as essentially foreclosing on all or part of the property and then contributing that share of the property deemed foreclosed on to a new partnership. That is, along with the borrower who's contributing, one, the new equity, and possibly a residual interest in the property. Now, assuming the debt's non-recourse, the deemed foreclosure part of the transaction would simply result in amount realized for the debt that's deemed converted, that is the B piece. So you have gain or loss measured by reference to the difference between the debt and the basis of the property. If the property's underwater, but the borrower still is sharing under the B tranche of the waterfall, which we see sometimes, the lender arguably has simply forgiven a portion of the debt as it's not claiming all the collateral that it could have been entitled to. So in this scenario, you arguably should bifurcate the debt, treat part as forgiven and part as discharged in a deemed foreclosure. And it's complicated. Let me give you an example. let's say the B tranche provides for payments 70% to the lender and 30% to the borrower until the B note is satisfied. Arguably there, 70% of the debt is treated as amount realized for 70% interest in the property, and 30% is treated as simply forgiven, giving rise to COD income. Since the lender could have claimed all 100% of the property, but chose to leave a 30% residual interest behind with the borrower, potentially to encourage it to work harder in resuscitating the property, things like that. Now, there also is a position that the disregarded entity transaction is treated just like the partnership transaction we talked about earlier. That is, as a contribution transaction to a partnership giving rise to all COD income. Practitioners differ as to the better treatment here. So you see some disagreement in the tax community over the treatment.
That makes sense. So Chelsea, what about the implications to the lender here?
Yeah. Now for the lender, the B note, given its priority, converts to equity. So the lender takes a basis in their partnership interest equal to the basis of that note that they are contributing. If the lender can take a business bad debt deduction in advance of that deemed conversion of that debt to equity, that often will be quite beneficial from a tax perspective, triggering ordinary loss today rather than a potential capital loss in the future down the road. Depending on the nature of the lender, there may be some reluctance to report the B note as equity. For debt funds, we see equity treatment followed more or less as a matter of course. The sponsor often has funds where they're on the borrower side of the transactions and they're familiar with the tax analysis for those arrangements. It's often a different story, however, for commercial banks. Their tax departments have a very different perspective and background. And in our experience, at least, they have less familiarity with the analysis of these types of structures. And the tax departments are large, more focused on corporate matters, tend to not be quite as nimble as the tax departments for a credit fund sponsor. You're dealing with a big corporate culture and the bureaucracy that's involved in getting approval to take an equity position on something that is in form debt can be pretty unwieldy.
So Jim, back to the borrower, immediate COD income in some instances is less than ideal. Are there any structures being considered that offer deferral of the COD income?
Some have considered a structure where the debt isn't immediately converted, but upon the occurrence of certain events, a portion of the debt will be forgiven, really based on a formula that replicates the results that you would have gotten in an AB structure. The type of events that you look for, it might be upon a sale of the property by a fixed date in which there's some minimum threshold met for the sales price. And that minimum threshold is generally the amount that would have been the A note amount in a more traditional AB structure. You'll still see minor modifications to the loan in this context. The maturity date on the debt will be extended. Interest rate may change. The covenants may be relaxed. But otherwise, the existing note stays in place as a single note until that contingency occurs. The hope in this situation is that the contingent forgiveness does not produce tax consequences until the contingency occurs. The analysis is very complicated, and there is material risk that the contingent forgiveness creates a contingent payment debt instrument, which under the OID rules produce a result that is similar to the debt contribution COD income result that we talked about earlier with contribution to a partnership. There's a lot of analysis required in evaluating these arrangements, but we have seen some situations where there is arguable deferral. There is, however, another potential barrier to this sort of structure, and that's the gap treatment of the arrangement. In some instances, the lender is trying to take a debt instrument that is entirely non-performing for gap purposes and turn it into two instruments, an A piece of which is performing, and the B piece of which is not. Our experience is that the gap rules force an actual bifurcation of the debt to provide for the favorable gap result. The favorable gap treatment is not possible when the debt continues to be the same overall instrument with changes that will only occur upon the future contingency. So gap concerns may prevent the contingent forgiveness structure as an option.
So as a tax guy, there's a lot of fun stuff to deal with when you're dealing with this situation. So, Jim, Chelsea, thanks for bringing a lot of this to light and putting this forward in a way I think our audience can really understand and dive into. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And we want to hear from you. If you have questions about this topic or anything else, please reach out to me, Jim, Chelsea, or any of your KPMG contacts. Thanks for joining.